We're excited to announce that our very own podcasting platform, Zencastr, has become a new sponsor to the show. Check out the podcast discount link in our show notes and stay tuned for why we love using Zen for the podcast.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You call this archaeology? Get out of there, Dan!
But hello, okay. Everyone. Welcome back to episode, what is it, 86?
Something like that.
Yeah, episode 86. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like it, but it's been like 3 years.
Let's see. God, there's so many things. Like, literally, there's so many things to talk about since I feel like it's been, what, almost a month?
Well, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, like the last piece for my birthday present to myself literally just arrived today.
Nice.
It's like a seat. Yeah, it's a seat for this bicycle I've been restoring ever since I bought it, like double digit number of years ago.
There you go.
Also makes you realize that back in the olden days, the English were insanely crazy, but they made really awesome machines that don't work very well.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, it looks like Amy's online too, and she says she can hear us, so that's good. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Well, I was going to say, speaking of machines, you know, I feel like you just bought a machine or two of them maybe and sold one. People might want to hear about that.
Yeah, well, I will tell you first off, if you want to follow what we're doing here, because if you're listening to this live or at least in, I don't know, end of June, early July, you'll get in right before we kick everything off. But if you follow Roadster Adventures, R-O-A-D, S-T-E-R Adventures on YouTube, then you'll get to see what's going on here and our progression to that, and then some of the adventures we're going to have as we move through this. But the thing I'm sitting in is our new home.
Uploaded an episode yesterday, right?
Yeah, yeah. We just uploaded an episode yesterday. It was our RV show episode from Memorial Day, where we're talking about... It's interesting to see that episode and then what we ended up buying, because this is not what we intended to buy. It's bigger and more
expensive, but we intended to buy
something probably a little bit older and a little bit smaller. But when we saw this one, it was a floor plan we had never seen before online. It's a rare floor plan for this model, and we didn't even know it was a possibility, and we really liked it. So I'm sitting, as you're seeing the Zoom call here, I'm sitting in the passenger seat. I've got my two 27 inch displays in front of me. I've got a little table to the left of me. That's the, let's see if I get my fingers right. This is the dinette back here. The kitchen is right behind me. The refrigerator's got these Post-it notes on it. And then there's a little love seat next to the refrigerator. Well, I've got just a punch list of some things we want to keep track of that we want to fix or replace or repair on this thing. I mean, it's a 5-year-old coach. Yeah, it's 5 years old. So there's always going to be things, you know.
True.
And then there's a little living room with an L-shaped sofa right back here by the TV. And then behind the TV is a bathroom and shower. And then in the very back is a queen-size bed and a pretty good-sized bedroom. So for anybody familiar with – oh, I see you posted the YouTube channel. Sweet. So for anybody that has seen a motorhome before or a coach, this is really a motor coach, it's 36 feet long, about 38 – actually 38 or 39 feet with our bikes hanging off the back. And it's got three slide outs. So that's why the living room is so big. There's a huge slide right here that has the dinette, and there's a huge slide right here that has the kitchen and the couch. And they slide out and give us a nice big space. And then there's a third slide in the bedroom that goes out right here this way. So it's pretty good size. I mean, it's probably, when the slides are out, I'd say it's probably 320 or 30 square feet, which sounds like a really small apartment. But when you realize your apartment can move and travel and go different places. I've been in four different places in the last 3 weeks. It's pretty fun. So,
yeah. I feel like the first thing someone's going to ask, like, you know, obviously I know someone asked you about this on Facebook, but would you recommend this to like a field tech? Like maybe like not necessarily one who just started, but like one maybe like mid-career bigger and they realize that you're just going to be on the road forever or whatever? Would you recommend something smaller, like the van life sort of thing?
Well, it's really not the size that matters, to be honest, as funny as that sounds. It's really the maintenance of it. Because you can be totally, if you have like a small van or something like that, you can be totally self-sufficient. You can have solar, you can have a, you know, you'll have a toilet, you can have an outdoor shower, even an indoor shower if it's big enough. You know, you can have all those things, but you got to have somewhere to dump those things. You've got to have somewhere to refill. You've got to have all those things. And, you know, like you can boondock, they call it, which is basically staying outside of all the modern comforts of home. And you can still really only do that in certain places for certain periods of time. And then you got to move. So if you're long-term for a project somewhere, you're going to be hard pressed not to hit an RV park or somewhere else where you can, you know, restock your supplies, restock your coach. Even if it's a van, empty your tanks and, you know, and keep going. So, but that being said, if you're paying rent somewhere and your rent is $1,000-$1,500 a month or something like that, and you have that kind of place, you could easily give that up and get something like this. You know, this was not cheap, but our payment is about $600 a month. Our insurance is about $65
a month. That's less than what I'm paying for my apartment now.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. And how much people make fun of us about the gas mileage we get, but what's the gas mileage on your apartment, Richie?
Not very
good, because you can't take it anywhere.
Oh, I was gonna say infinite, but
yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, if you can think ahead and think about where to keep this thing, like for example, we got a free Thousand Trails membership. It's a campground membership. When we got this thing, because it was a promo with the extended warranty. It was a free 1 year Thousand Trails. So we actually haven't paid for a campground, a nice RV park campground with full hookups, since we got this. And you know, if you didn't have that for free, you'd pay about $500 to $600 a year for that, and then you could get it. Then you could stay anywhere you want. There's some weird rules to it, but it's basically 2 weeks in a park, and then you got to be out 7 days, and then you can go back in 2 weeks. So you'd have to do some working around for that.
Kind of like public land that way.
Yeah, pretty much. There are memberships you can get where you pay a much higher annual rate, and you can stay in parks all year long. There's no break. But anyway, it's like, I don't know. It's like anything. It's got its ups and downs. You know, you have your own space and you could travel around with it, but you have to keep that space maintained and you have to keep it clean and you have to keep it. You really have to watch it and keep an eye out where you're going to put it. So if you take a project in the middle of a city somewhere, you're going to be hard pressed to put this there. And then do you have one that's big enough to where you can actually tow a vehicle behind it? And I'll tell you one thing, unless that vehicle's a manual or a stick shift, you're not going to tow a truck or anything like that. You can if it's a stick, because you can put it in neutral, but you can't flat tow most vehicles.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know
that. Like Tacomas, you can't flat tow a Tacoma. You'd have to put it on a dolly or you'd have to put it on a flatbed. And since Tacoma, my Tacoma weighed 5,500 pounds. And that exceeds the weight of the hitch on this 36-foot RV by 500 pounds. So I couldn't even tow the Tacoma if I wanted to. So you got to keep that in mind. If you need a field vehicle, then you need something big enough that can tow that field vehicle.
Oh, wow. You know? It's no wonder then that I see most RVs, they have like little, those little SUVs or little cars.
Yeah. Like a Jeep Wranglers and RAV4s, Honda RAV4s are two of the more popular ones because they're flat towable.
Yeah.
And then we actually got rid of our Tacoma. I figure when I have archaeology project, we'll just rent something because the client pays for it anyway. But we got rid of our Tacoma and got a Ford C-Max. It's a plug-in hybrid because it's one of the flat towable cars and it's electric, which we wanted. So,
Oh, cool. So that's what you got. Interesting. I didn't even know they still sold those.
They don't. They stopped making them 2 years ago. but we found one in San Jose for about $12,000, which was, you know, we sold our Tacoma for $20,000, and it was 5 years old with 108,000 miles on it. So,
which tells you that like buying a Tacoma is like buying, you know, it's like, I don't know, buying a Rolex or something.
Almost, I know, right?
Just in terms of holding value.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. So, you know, we'll have more videos and things coming up on our YouTube channel, and more things we're going to do to this, and just enjoy life. We're going to end up back in Reno end of August for probably the first part of September, depending on how long we end up being there. And then we're headed to the East Coast for the fall and half of the winter. And I don't know where we're going to be after that. That's the whole point.
So, interesting. Yeah. Oh God. So if you're anyone's there, like basically the end of ticks. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I don't plan on being in the field back there, but yeah, I also don't think the tick season ever ends. So, you know, I've worked in that area before. But yeah, I was going to say, if anybody wants a 2-bedroom townhouse in Reno, for a good price in an up and coming area with brand new midtown features, then let me know. Cause we're going to be setting it up for rent in September.
Oh, perfect. Cause I thought you were about to sell it. I'm like, man, you know, that's an investment. That's an actual investment, like a real investment.
It is. I mean, in the year and a half we've been there, we've already got $20,000 in equity. And if we can just get somebody to help us break even on the mortgage and the HOA, we're not going to make any money on it. But if we can just break even on that and not have to make that payment, that's really all we're looking for. So.
Ooh. Oh, before I forget, are you going to be installing solar on your RV, or is that even possible?
Yeah, it's possible. There's actually one solar panel, a small one, up on one of the air conditioners. I don't think it's doing a whole lot, but we want to install solar across the whole entire roof. And then typically when you install solar, you convert your batteries from lead acid to lithium. And you're talking about a $4,000 install when you're looking at that, because the lithium batteries are not cheap. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now if we just did solar, we could probably get away with maybe $1,500, a couple thousand, but the lithium batteries add on another $2,000-$3,000. I mean, they last longer and they have more power. Your boondocking capabilities are more, but I think with this Thousand Trails membership, we're not going to be doing a lot of boondocking in the next year, just because we're using this free membership that we got. So we'll see. Because if you're plugged into a park, you don't need solar. You don't need anything. You don't need your batteries. I mean, we're plugged into a 50 amp service right now, and we can run both air conditioners and all our appliances at the same time, and it's no big deal. So having solar and lithium wouldn't do us any good right now.
Oh, you know, that's interesting, because obviously way back, way, way, way back when Goal Zero first came out, I bought one of their power packs, and it's a lead acid one. And recently, it's a long story, but I was looking at the new generation power packs that they sell, not necessarily Goal Zero, but just like the lithium powered ones that with the built-in inverters. And I was shocked at how much smaller they are, and that they're cheaper than the one I bought. And hopefully they last longer than my Goal Zero, because my Goal Zero, even though the batteries aren't cheap, you know, are not expensive, they don't last very long. They don't hold a charge for that long a time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's a very long story, but you know, I mean, I went on a whole camping adventure in the middle of nowhere, Nevada, and that's like a whole different story we'll get into in a second. But basically, I learned that I really needed like a third cooler to go along with my little lunch cooler and then my full size cooler, because it was kind of hard to get ice. And so I was falling down the YouTube rabbit hole of like looking up like those little DC powered fridges and, you know, AC and, you know, those, battery packs to power them and a solar setup. And it's like, wow, that's like, you know, I remember when I was first looking that up, when I first got to Reno, that was like $1,000+. And now you can get the whole thing up and running for like less than $1,000, which still isn't cheap, but it's like a lot more attainable than it used to be.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. I mean, the prices and all that stuff are really dropping, because we watch a few RV, you know, channels on YouTube, and we're a few years back on a couple of them, and I mean, their lithium install and their solar installs were really expensive, but even, you know, watching people do it now, it's coming down in price even now, and you know what, the influx of people that are buying RVs, we just got to this new resort Sunday. And in the span of just a couple hours, we had somebody arrive on the left side of us and somebody arrive on the right side of us. And for both of them, they were brand new RVs. One was a camper trailer and one was an RV, but they were brand new to those people. And they were just taking it out for a day to try it out. So all the articles are saying people are buying RVs like crazy. And because that's the only way they can take a vacation and stay socially distanced, you know, so they're buying RVs, and which tells me, you know, for field techs and people interested in them, either when this whole thing blows over and everything goes back to normal in like a year or more, or maybe this winter when people realize, hey, shit, I don't really want this RV and I've got this huge payment now for the next like 20 years. You know, there's going to be a lot of RVs on the market, I think, at some point when the whole camping season ends. So,
although I will admit, even though, you know, it's kind of nerdy, I was like looking at like vintage Class Cs. I mean, not necessarily vintage, but, you know, just like from the 90s and like the 80s, just because, you know, I kind of like the, you know, some of those Class Cs that I've seen, or not Class Cs, but the Class Bs, the little, like the vans, like this van conversion. Yeah. Some of those look dead on for like, you know, it's like, wow, this is like what the A-team would drive. So I'm like, cool. I kind of want one of those.
But, the only thing you got to worry about with an older unit, regardless of what class it is there are so many systems on these things, and something can look decent, it can drive decent, the engine can be good, but maybe the entire water system is rotted out, or the water heater has failed, or the water. Water is such a big deal. There's hoses and pipes everywhere for draining water, for supplying water, for bringing water around, and if any of those have failed or failed in the past, and man, you just, and it's hard to see that stuff until it's the last minute, you know?
And not just that, but windows and those ceiling vents
windows
are like notorious leak points, because I've been watching a few channels that originally started out as van life channels, but now but for some weird reason, now all these van life channels have literally moved on to vintage RVs, all of them, almost all at the same time. They've literally all just bought vintage RVs and they're just all restoring them all at the same time. And they've literally got all the same issues, not just the internal systems, which you mentioned, because they're like literally ripping out all the old systems and putting in new ones because they don't work anymore after like 40 or 50 years. But also just like all the leaks. Like I watched these people like have to get in full respirators and eye shields and everything just to like replace the wood framing around like, you know, their, I forget what you call it, but like they bought a Class C and there's like, you know, that forward sleeping hatch area or the forward sleeping area above the cab. So they were just doing that and stuff like that.
Nice. Yeah.
But you know, it's interesting. You know, people, Mark Silver says, I'll be looking for a camper. If they do come cheaper. I definitely would recommend that.
Yeah.
But for me, when I went this sent to the middle of nowhere, Nevada for technically it was going to be like several episodes worth of videos, but I only ended up recording 3 out of 6 that I intended. But anyway, one of the things I found is the fact that I realized when I was going down there that for what I want to do in terms of like recording videos that a camper sounds like fun, but I don't think I'd be able to get to as many places as I'd want to. So I started looking, going the opposite. I started looking for like backpacking gear and stuff. And one of the things I realized when I was camping there is the fact that Nevada is very peculiar compared to a lot of the outdoor and camping channels that I follow. Because, you know, a lot of those channels are either in the Northwest or they're in the East. And you realize when you get to the middle of nowhere, Nevada, that it's very different. There's rocks everywhere. There's so much sage that you can't set up a big tent unless you just want a big sage bush in the middle of your tent. And insane winds.
Yeah.
So trying to come up with a backpacking tent that's small enough to fit between a cluster of sages and will stand up to like 50 mile an hour winds and still be under 5 pounds has not been easy.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. And ironically, all the stuff I've been looking at that will actually fit those fit that criteria, basically they're all like military tents. So, you know, I'm like, wow, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, well, that would be the ones that could stand up to that.
Chris Webster here for the Archaeology Podcast Network. We strive for high-quality interviews and content so you can find information on any topic in archaeology from around the world. One way we do that is by recording interviews with our hosts and guests located in many parts of the world all at once. We do that through the use of Zencastr. That's Zencastr. Zencastr allows us to record high-quality audio with no stress on the guest. Just send them a link to click on and that's it. Zencastr does the rest. They even do automatic transcriptions. Check out the link in the show notes for 30% off your first 3 months, or go to zencastr.com and use the code TAS. Looking to expand your knowledge of x-rays and imaging in the archaeology field? Then check out An Introduction to Paleoradiography, a short online course offering professional training for archaeologists and affiliated disciplines. Created by archaeologist, radiographer, and lecturer James Elliott, the content of this course is based upon his research and teaching experience in higher education. It is approved by the Chartered Institute for Archaeologists as 4 hours of training. That's in the UK, for those of you that don't know. So don't miss out on this exciting opportunity for professional and personal development. For more information on pricing and course structure, visit paleoimaging.com. That's P-A-L-E-O imaging.com. And look for the link in the show notes to this episode.
You know, thinking of campers and even Class Bs, like some of the vans and stuff, I'll tell you what, you really got to watch that stuff too, because most of those will not be able to handle most of the roads and things in Nevada that we go to. You know, it's just, I mean, even like this thing here, I mean, obviously we've got enormous tires on this thing. I mean, they're $500 a piece and I've got six of them. But that's just to hold the weight. You know, the thing sways a lot. And anytime we go down a road that's, you know, got a bunch of potholes in or concrete, you know, mixtures or, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff going on, you could just hear everything just banging around in the back here. And we had to put, we've heard some different things, but we got some of that shelf liner material, that silicone shelf liner, and like cut some pieces out of it to put between our plates and dishes and like I've our wine bottles. Too. Yeah. We got like a wine rack that sits up, but we tilted sideways on the counter and put the wine bottles in there and then put some of that between them. And just things like that. But everything just shakes and rattles and feels like it's going to come apart when you're going down a road. And it would be no different for something that was more, you know, industrial, you know, like even those like van conversions. I mean, you really have to have your stuff locked down and do it right.
Yeah. Cause you know, I realized, you know, there was, the third place I wanted to visit, I realized that even with my truck, even though it's got 3-inch lift and a lot of trail armor and, you know, is like got really good tires on it, I realized that if I really, really, really wanted to get to the top there because there was a storm rolling in, that I would probably have to hike up, which is, you know, cause I didn't, and leave my truck at the bottom just to make sure that, just to make sure, because I didn't want to, because the place I was going to was basically up a steep and narrow canyon. And there was like, there was a creek running through this canyon. So my truck could have gotten stuck at any point if any serious weather came in. So that's why I've been looking at all this backpacking gear because, you know, climbing, cause walking up like 3 or 4 miles with like, you know, with like old fashioned camping gear does not appeal to me. It's like, my goal was to, basically come up with a base weight, not including water and food and camera equipment and batteries and stuff, of like 10 pounds. And that's not easy.
Yeah. I can imagine. So,
and the crazy part is that, you know, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
All right. Well, I was going to say that, you know, a lot of these camping channels I watch, they also get their base weight down by bringing water filters with them. And that's not a real possibility in most parts of Nevada because either A, there's no water, or B, it's the water is incredibly toxic and no amount of like water filtration is going to clean that up.
Yeah. It's hard to filter out like arsenic and ammonia. Yeah.
Oh, let me go through some, let me go through some comments first. Mark Severs says, wind in Nevada? No. And then Amy says, last winter I purchased a 2-person backpacking tent that was super light and pretty small in REI garage sale, which my God, trying to go to one of those here in Reno is like crazy town. But I don't know if it'll stand up to wind. Everything has been closed, which is so very true. Like, oh my God, like that's, I'm going to get to that in a second. But one of those things I will recommend to people who are like buying camping gear for either vacation or to go out in the field, don't order it from REI. They, their distribution channels are terrible. Like I ordered some stuff for the camping trip I just went on like almost a month ago and none of it has arrived yet. The only stuff I got that arrived on time was from Amazon and eBay. So if you really need camping equipment and, you know, if you really need camping equipment to go out right now, it's either Amazon or eBay or even like, I want to say Walmart, but I tried to stock up at the Walmart before I went out of town and it was insane. It was insane because everything closed so early. Like the Walmart in Fallon closes before 9 o'clock.
Jeez.
Yeah, because I thought
they were all open 24 hours.
They used to be, but now thanks to coronavirus, they are not. And, you know, normally I'm like super paranoid when I go out camping. Like when I first got to Nevada, I made sure I was like triple redundant on cooking gear in terms of like fuels. Mm-hmm. So I have a propane stove. I have a butane powered stove. And then I have a white gas powered stove. And between Reno and the place where I was camping, not a single store had any of the fuel which I needed for to cook. Not a single one. I'm like, my God, right. This is insane.
Right.
It was the craziest thing ever. Thankfully, where I went, there was actually a gas station that doubled as a grocery store. And they had a really good bakery, or they had a really good, really good bakery source, which is always a surprise. We're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, you know, between what I brought and that, I was like, good-ish.
Yeah. You know, why don't we, I mean, we're a little over the halfway mark, but I want to get to this because alluded to it, but why don't you tell people what you've been out filming, what you're taking a look at? I mean, obviously they should check out your YouTube channel. Don't forget to mention that.
Yeah. Yeah. Happy archaeology fun time.
There you go. But, and Rich, I got to say real quick, Richie has been really killing it on that channel. Like you went a long time without the ability to really keep up on it. Like you had all this video recorded and we had these episodes here recorded and it was just kind of haphazard. But man, in the last like 3 or 4 months or more, you've been just like weekly and like clockwork and had a lot of good stuff. So definitely go check out that channel if you want to see some cool videos.
Well, the crazy part is that for most of my series, I'm actually caught up through basically the end of the year. And like for some of these ghost town videos won't even come out till next year.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm not going to say necessarily where I was, because some of these towns are like, you know, I don't want these towns to get looted or anything. But I was in the Big Smoky Valley, which is, you know, there's like one valley where there's like Berlin. And I always forget, is it Lone or Ione? Whatever town is the big. Yeah. But Big Smoky Valley is a much better valley if you like ghost towns. It's like literally one valley over the west or the east. It's like right on the other side of the mountain range there. And my God, the ghost towns there are incredible. They're some of the best ghost towns I've ever encountered, like ever. Like the whole time I've been in archaeology. They're like, you know, the sort of things you see in guidebooks. And the crazy part is that they're not even as good now as they used to be in the 60s, because the guidebook I had from the 60s like showed them being like almost untouched. But you know, they're definitely touched now. But man, they were insane. Like, I forgot if I told you about this when we were chatting yesterday on Zoom, but Park Canyon is one that isn't necessarily noted or marked on any maps. And it is like, the mill itself is interesting. You know, it's like a very large ruins. And I think it's the only, it was the only mill there in the Big Smoky Valley that had an aerial tram, which isn't like, which was interesting in and of itself, but I wasn't going to be able to find the tram without a drone because it was so overgrown. But but it was like the most beautiful location I've ever seen. Like if I had been thinking ahead, I would have camped there, but I really wanted to get to the place. You know, I really wanted to get to the famous one, or one of the famous ones in Big Smoky Valley, which is Ophir Canyon, which is actually, there's like a road sign. There's like one of those Nevada historical markers, but unfortunately just that's the one where I couldn't get up to because I didn't want to be rained out.
Right.
And then Belmont is incredible. Is also incredible in its own way, even though it's no longer a ghost town. It's, you know, it used to be a ghost town. Like when I was looking at pictures of it from the 60s, it definitely, you know, is abandoned and, you know, buildings are falling apart. But now it's just a town. Now it's basically like, it's about as built up as like, say, Austin, if anyone here is familiar with Austin. And I don't know what the California equivalent would be, but it's like, now it's just a functioning town again, which is insane. And all the cool stuff that I really wanted to see all had keep out signs on it because they were like on someone's property now. So I'm like, fine, be that way.
Yeah.
But the but they did have two really, really, really cool mills there. One of them was, oh God, what was it? It was a flotation mill, which I don't think I've ever heard of. I've never heard of flotation mill. I was going to look it up later, but I assume that's some type of chemical process. And then the other mill, which was much older, was a 40 stamp mill, which is like, I don't think I've heard of a stamp mill with that many stamps on it. And it it still had its like gold bullion room intact, which, nice. Well, I mean, mostly intact. The building, the the room itself was still intact, but someone had taken the door as like a souvenir, which was like the really cool part.
Yeah.
And my God, and the crazy part about those two mills is that they were each only in operation for 2 years apiece, which is like, you, when you look at how much money and capital must have invested in these two mills, and for them to only operate for 2 years is like insane. Makes you think it's, I mean, it's, oh my God, it almost makes you wonder if the people who were building his mills just took the money and ran. Or at least I'd say that. Yeah. if the mills weren't so like impressively built, like they were just fascinating. Of course, yeah. I don't know how many of our watchers are actually interested in like historic gold mining.
I mean, I'm sure probably a few.
Yeah. Interesting. Oh, nice. You know, there is one thing I wanted to point out, because, you know, you were talking about how many videos I've been putting out. And, you know, I was getting ready to build a new computer before this whole coronavirus thing happened. But then I watched a video on Linus Tech Tips where instead of doing that, they just upgraded a 10-year-old computer and it ran almost as well as a modern, well, not almost as well, but almost like very close to like a modern low-end like computer. And I figured I can probably do something similar with my 5-year-old computer. So recently what I did was it already had an SSD. So I installed a modern-ish used graphics card and upgraded the amount of RAM to like a modern amount of RAM. And that was like less than $250. So, you know, if you're like a field tech who needs like to upgrade your computer, don't necessarily think about buying a whole new computer, especially these days, you know, with how much prices have gone up and how hard it is to get parts. But I would definitely recommend just upgrading. Unless you've got an Apple, in which case I don't think that's always possible.
Apples can be upgraded. In certain ways.
Oh, that reminds me. Did they announce anything interesting at their, what do they call it? WWDC, or do they call it something else?
Yeah, Worldwide Developer Conference. I've been following a little bit, nothing really on the hardware front, anything to speak of, but definitely iOS 14, which includes like watchOS 7, I think, and then iPadOS 14.
Oh,
they're getting closer and closer and more functional, but closer to desktop versions of things. And I've heard of some interesting features coming down the line on all of them. And it'll just be a nice little suite of features to go with the new phones. So I think the new phones are still slated for. They keep pushing it back. I think it's October at this point, but I'm not really sure. So usually it's about the middle of September.
Oh, wait, they didn't announce. Yeah. But have I just heard about this, or did they announce that they were switching from Intel to their own design chips? Or is that just something I've been seeing on like Apple-themed YouTube channels?
You might have just seen that. I don't remember that, because I actually haven't watched the keynote yet, the replay of it, and I couldn't watch it when it was live. But you know, they've been switching to their own chips for a lot of things lately. Yeah. The phones are all on their own chips, the tablets, the AirPods.
Oh yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me if they went to their own chips on the computers at some point too. But you know, there's issues with that, because software has to be compatible, of course. And Apple's been known to just say screw compatibility and just do it anyway, and people conform. Yeah. So who knows? But the one thing I did hear that was interesting is that people think that they're either saying they shouldn't, or people are saying that they think that the new phones this fall, I don't think that'll happen, but they think the new phones this fall, they're already not coming with headphones anymore, and they may not come with power cord and a charging block, because wait, people all have their own. Yeah, people have like handfuls of those laying around, you know, and they're easy to find.
Oh,
and people always buy aftermarket and third party, and they hardly ever stick with the Apple ones. And they're just kind of like realizing that, and they're going to say, "Listen, we're not going to give you one."
Oh, because I thought you were saying that because they just expect people to just use wireless charging.
Well, there's that too. You know, this wireless charger. I mean, I've got a wireless charger, you know, right here that I put my phone on, right on my side panel here. And
shouldn't your new vehicle, the one you just bought, the Forge, does that come with a wireless charger?
The C-Max. No, there actually isn't one in there. It's a 2016, yeah, but it's not exactly fully featured. I haven't seen any wireless charging stations in there, but there's like four USB ports in the main cabin area. And then right behind the center console is a 110 outlet on an inverter automatically, which is pretty sweet. But
really?
No, I haven't seen any wireless charging in there.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. But
interesting. Because, you know, anyway, I feel like maybe Apple's... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just saying it's interesting that they, I think people are saying that Apple shouldn't come with, that the phone shouldn't come with charging blocks, but I also thought that they were going to be USB-C this fall too, because the iPads are USB-C. It would make sense that the phones go to USB-C at some point soon. And if they do that, well, not every Apple user has a USB cord. It's just laying around. I've got like 20 of them because of these GoPro cameras, but and because of my laptop too, but you know, not everybody has those. So who knows?
Well, the thing is, like, I know most new cars that are being like sold right now or being going to be sold next year, they almost all come with USB-C as opposed to regular USB. And so, you know, I feel like between that and the fact that most new cars that are being sold today offer, even your cheapest Hyundai come with wireless charging as an option. You know, maybe that's what Apple is thinking. I might be wrong about that because Apple has some obtuse thinking sometimes.
Yeah, it depends on the size of the car too. Like, I don't even know where you would put a wireless charging platform in this car. It's pretty small. I mean, it's a four-door, but it's a small car. It's a hatchback, and there's nowhere to like lay a phone. There's no big compartment where you can just put stuff. Maybe down in the center console, but who's going to put their phone down there just to charge it? You know what I mean? So,
well, it depends.
Yeah, I don't know where you would even put it.
Because it depends. Because I know, like, it's the most cars also these, I mean, basically all cars these days come with either with Alexa, Google, or Apple CarPlay, you know, and once you get your phone in there and it hooks up, you know, you don't even really need your phone anymore. I mean, unless I'm wrong about that.
No, I mean, you're right. You're right. it takes over those features. So that's one thing I got to do with this RV is I got to get a new stereo. This stereo is like the most archaic thing I've ever seen in my life. It's from 2014-15, and I don't think it was very advanced then. So, yeah.
Oh, there is one thing I did see that I did want to talk to you about. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but have you seen the testing video of the Rivian all-electric pickup trucks? They've been doing some off-road testing with them, which I thought was super cool.
Nice. I've seen the Rivians before, but I haven't seen any of the testing videos. How are they performing?
Awesome. I mean, they're electric, so, and they've got like motors on all four wheels.
Yeah.
I mean, so I imagine it's
pretty powerful.
Yeah. So I imagine it's like driving the little RC truck you used to have, unless that was gas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. what was it? That RC car. No, it didn't have, I mean, it was one electric motor. It didn't have electric motors on all four wheels.
Oh, interesting. Amy says that her Android came with a USB-C dongle for headphones, which I think are just a terrible idea. Didn't your iPhone 10 come with something like that?
Yeah, my iPhone 10 came with a because I've got. No, it came with a lightning jack dongle because I don't have USB-C on the iPhone 10. So, yeah, it came with a little dongle so you could plug a regular set of headphones, a 1/8-inch jack, into that and then plug it into your lightning jack connector.
Yeah, but that's a terrible idea because how are you charging it? Unless, you know, you just leave it on the Qi mat.
Well, you don't have to charge your phone 24 hours a day. I mean, if you're typically on your headphones anyway, even if you're – I've heard people say that before, which is a really interesting argument to me because they're like – well, how am I supposed to charge it while I have my headphones in? But I'm like, when are you listening to your headphones on your phone? When you're out jogging, when you're biking, when you're doing whatever, you're not charging it at the same time ever.
Oh, when I'm walking around.
So, but you're not charging the phone when you're walking around. Yeah. Unless you need to, you know, unless you need to, but most of the time you don't need to charge your phone while you're walking around. If you've used your phone all day long and your battery's about to die, then you're going to have an issue. But they also make other dongles that have both charging and headphones. So, you know, you can get one of those. Like every single dongle I've got for my computer or my iPad has like HDMI or USB or whatever it's got, but it also has a pass-through charging port. So you know, if you need that, you can get it. But I think what they're banking on is most people are not charging in the same situations that they're using their headphones. I mean, it's maybe you're sitting at a desk all day and you're listening to your headphones on your phone. But, you know, even then, you know, Richie, you're walking around and you're charging it, but you also have wireless headphones.
Bluetooth.
So,
of course.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't even matter.
And the crazy part about that is that I specifically bought my phone. I don't know if people can see this, but because it comes with an audiophile grade headphone, I forget what you call that, like a DAC or whatever, or a audiophile grade headphone amp built into it. And I've used it so little that it's like wow, I could have just bought any phone. Because, you know, I mean, you don't have to buy like the Samsung Buds or the any brand name ones. Like Amazon has their house brand, Anker, which produces those really awesome power banks. They also produce some really good Bluetooth headphones. Mm-hmm. And they're Amazon, so obviously they're easy to return. You know, and that's what I use.
Yeah.
Wait, is it what I use? Well, whatever. Like, you know, Bluetooth headphones are like so cheap and they've gotten so good that like they're all like almost any brand except for maybe the ones you buy at the gas station are basically foolproof.
Yeah. Honestly, with the ubiquity of Bluetooth and the cheapness of the headphones these days, I mean, even a, like you said, even a cheap set of Bluetooth headphones still sounds great, right?
Yeah.
And connects really well and
yeah.
Doesn't have any dropping issues and it's just really good. And I don't know. I mean, once you go Bluetooth, I don't know why you would want wires connected to your head and your phone anymore. I mean, it's just a recipe for disaster.
The main problem I have, I'm not sure if you found this with your AirPods, but I keep misplacing them. I'm like, where the hell did I put this thing? Like always, like there's like one Bluetooth headphone that I'm like missing right now. And I'm like, I've been going through all my jackets, trying to look in the pockets. And I'm like, God damn it. I know I didn't lose it.
Well, with Apple, you can do Find My AirPods right on the screen, just like Find My iPhone, and it will play a high-pitched noise through the AirPod, and it's smart enough to not do that while it's in your ear. Because if you accidentally do that while it's somebody else is wearing the headphone or something like that, because it's got ear sensing technology, so it knows when it's in your ear, so it won't actually play that sound while it's in your ear. In fact, maybe it'll just play it quieter or something to let somebody know they're looking for them, but it won't play the ear-piercing sound, literally. Now, if you're like my wife earlier was listening to her headphones, but set the case down somewhere and she's like, couldn't find her case anywhere. There's nothing you do about that. The case doesn't make any sounds.
Oh my God. You know, it's interesting. You know, not only do they do that, but God, they also do, I forget what Apple calls it, but they do the pass through, don't they? Where you can, where it still allows ambient noises, like someone trying to talk to you to pass through as you're listening to your, listening to whatever you're listening to. I always forget the Apple newer calls it.
Apple calls it transparency, and the newer ones do that. The original version does not. But the ones as of, I want to say last year, last fall or something like that, they have transparency mode, which allows sound to come in, which is pretty great. And I have a version of that with my Bose headphones, or my Bose sunglasses. Because there's nothing actually in your ear with those. But then again, the downside with those is that they're not as loud as regular headphones. So if you're in a noisy environment, like a, you know, really windy or a loud vehicle or something like that, it's really hard to hear anything out of those.
You may have heard my pitch for membership. It's a great idea and really helps out. However, you can also support us by picking up a fun t-shirt, sticker, or something from a large selection of items from our Tee Public store. Head over to arcpodnet.com/shop for a link. That's arcpodnet.com/shop to pick up some fun swag and support the show.
Will this put to bed the age old question of whether field techs can be allowed to have headphones in their ears, or will there always be some complainers?
There's always people out there that say you shouldn't wear headphones, and it's a blanket policy, and they're just like, it's like all old school people that are stuck in the past, and they've got these blanket policies about anything, and they don't look at anything new.
Yeah.
I think if you honestly, I think it's safe if you do it in the right way. And sometimes it's not safe. Sometimes you got to be smart about it. And you're like, listen, if I were to wear headphones right now, it would be completely dangerous because I need to pay attention. I need to be totally aware. Yeah. But I think some things like those Bose frames and the, you know, they don't even know, a lot of people aren't even going to know that those are even speakers, and they're not going to know that you're even listening to something unless it's quiet and they're standing right next to you and you got it up, cranked up really loud. But even if you've got it up all the way, you can still hear everything around you. Now, that doesn't mean you're paying attention, but as we all know, even if you're not wearing headphones, it doesn't mean you're paying attention. No. So seen plenty of people screw up and do stupid things when we thought they were paying attention and they weren't wearing headphones or anything. They were just spacing out.
My God, you know what's interesting, you know, not to like jump around, but the interesting thing I was just realizing, because you mentioned you were back in late August / early September, and I didn't want to talk about what happened in, you know, out in Elko for in a second, but, you know, with your truck. But anyway, before we get to that, I think it's been a very interesting field season because every company I've ever worked for has contacted me and said, you know, do you still want to be on our on-call list? And because we got a lot of projects coming up and blah, blah, blah. And the interesting thing about that is the fact that, A, that's never happened before. And B, it seems like, I don't know, it seems like everyone, especially if they're a California-based company, like has a lot of work in the pipeline. But, you know, it's just like, I don't know if it's, you know, the coronavirus or what. But, you know, it seems like for me at least, it's been a very busy field season because it's almost July. And I feel like other than the past 2 weeks, I've been working for almost the whole season, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of work to do, and probably because you know, a lot of things got shut down when states rushed to close in March, and then stayed closed for April and bunch of May. So before we had a chance to figure it out, it doesn't take long for work to stack up, you know. So it doesn't surprise me that you've been working pretty consistently since you started. So I don't know.
Now, you know, I was referencing Elko earlier. Did you want to talk about that? Because, you know, I know we've talked about the keys before, and I feel like that mine is like, you know, for some weird reason, you and rentals and that mine don't seem to go together. Because I haven't heard the story yet either.
I'll tell you what, man. Yeah, so we were staying about 20 miles or 20 minutes or so north of this mine, north of the mine entrance, actually, on a highway. And it was a Saturday morning, and we left, I don't know, it was about 7 o'clock, 6:30, 7 o'clock. And I think we were meeting our contact at 7, so it was probably about 6:30. And, you know, there's nobody out on that road. And the speed limit's 70. And so I'm doing like 75, maybe even a little faster. And there's literally nobody out there. It's wide open. I'm usually pretty good at dawn and dusk times at looking for deer because you can usually see them running through the field and then coming across in front of you. And it's pretty wide open out there, except we were coming around a corner, and it was a really easy kind of right turn corner. And so I'm kind of looking off to the right, you know, at the head of the corner, just watching ahead of me. And I missed this deer popping right up out of the thick, tall sagebrush right on my left. And this huge doe, she ran right in front of me. And I caught her out of the corner of my eye on my left-hand side and immediately hit the brakes and didn't lock it up. But I hit the brakes and swerved to the left because she was running across me to the right. If I hadn't done that, we'd have hit her dead on and she probably would have gone through the windshield. And I can't tell you how bad that would have been. But as it is, like my wife was actually bending down, tying her boots, and the airbag never went off, but we hit her right in the ass, right in the back right of her quarter, and hit her so hard it spun her around and she hit both doors and dented in the doors. Like my wife couldn't open the passenger door. Yeah.
Wow. And, oh my God.
But it totally collapsed the entire quarter panel all the way back to the tire. And in fact, there was a pullout right as we hit her. So we actually were able to slow down and pull way off the road. And I looked at it and there was fluid leaking all over the place. There was, you could see all the way into the tire. There were pieces of the car all over the road, and there were pieces of deer and deer crap all over the front of the car because we literally scared the crap out of this deer. And, And a piece of the body had come into the tire too and shaved about probably half an inch or an inch all the way around the inside of the tire. And it was just laying there. The tire never exploded though, because they were basically brand new tires. And it was, it was something. It was something. It was so close to being super bad, but that Ford Edge that we had, that rental, it just took that crumple zone. And it really took the words crumple zone to heart because my wife was like, what the hell was that? Like, she didn't even know we had hit something. And
really,
you know, it just absorbed it like butter. Again, airbags never went off, nothing. And we just took it. So the only thing that really sucked was it was a Saturday morning and it took hours to get a hold of Enterprise. Geico, we were on the phone with right away, our insurance company. They were super cool, yeah. And they let us just call a tow truck, and because they couldn't get a hold of Enterprise and either. And so we just called a tow truck, and they came out in a flatbed and came out to get us. Luckily, the flatbed driver was super cool, too. We're like, listen, dude, just bill Enterprise for this and drop it at the airport because that's where they're at. If you could take us back to our RV, just like 20 minutes to the north, that'd be great. And he was like, yeah, that's fine. I'll just bill it to Enterprise. And was like, you do what you got to do, man.
Wait, how'd you get to the mine then? Or did you obviously well, didn't so get the next, there.
No, we canceled work for the day because that took us about 4 hours. That whole ordeal took us about 4 hours. And our contact, she came out and met us at the road. And we were like, listen, just go home and we'll do this tomorrow. I was all ready to come out like the following week or something. But she's like, nope, I'll work on a Sunday. Let's just get it done. So we drove our RV. We packed up our whole thing in the morning and we drove our RV down to the mine and parked it outside the main mine office and then got in her vehicle and she drove us around to do the project. So, yeah, so that was some kind of ordeal. And we're still dealing with it a little bit, although it's a slow process because we've got to wait for Enterprise to do their damage assessments and then basically send them to us or send them straight to Geico. I don't know how they're going to do it. And then Geico's going to cover it. We've already paid the deductible. And so hopefully, our deductible was $500 for that.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah. So we paid that and hopefully that's it. Hopefully that's all she wrote and that's all we have to pay. So
man.
Yeah. It was pretty bad. So
I feel like at this rate, Enterprise is never going to rent you a vehicle for that area if you're going to go to Elko again.
Listen, first off, I was driving, but hopefully Enterprise isn't watching this video because the car was not in my name. And honestly, the first time when I was with you, it wasn't in my name then either. It was in the company's name. So I've never actually destroyed an Enterprise vehicle, according to the official record.
Man, that is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I know. I mean, you know, because think about it. I mean, it's like so rare to hit anything in Nevada.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, anything that is an animal anyway.
I don't know about that, man. I've come really close to hitting deer many times where you just got to swerve or you see them coming and you got to hit your brakes. I don't know how many times. And in fact, I'm so like prepared for it, prepared for the deer to run out in front of you. When we were first getting to that RV park, it was a Thursday night and we did, you know, we were at the RV place in Sparks and they were fixing some things for us. And we got out of there like 2 hours later than we had planned. So we ended up getting up to that area in the dark and it was just barely getting dark, you know, cause it's like solstice time. So it was like getting dark around 8:30, 9 o'clock. And we were getting up there. The sun had gone down, but it was that kind of light where it was, you could still see, you know, like without your headlights. And that is prime deer time right there. And I was just like babying it with that RV because there's no maneuverability with the RV. You're not going to swerve. Yeah. You're not going to slam on the brakes. You're not going to do anything. You're just going to take it full front on with the RV.
Yeah.
And that's all there is to it. And I was just like, man, this thing is brand new to us. I mean, it's 5 years old, but it's new to us. And it was like, I do not need to hit something right now. So I was scanning the horizon and looking everywhere I could. And then of course, 2 days later, we hit a deer with the rental.
Oh, by the way, John Flood says, Enterprise may not know who you are, but I suspect the deer know your name.
Indeed, John. Indeed. So I don't think that deer made it. Our mine contact, when we were standing in front of the car, she went back to look for it. And unless it was in the tall brush that was right off the side of the road, which is possible because it was super tall right there. I think she probably ran away and then died. But
oh, my God.
Who knows?
Yeah. There was a field crew. Was it? I was on this project, but thankfully I was not in that truck. But there was a deer with completely broken legs. Or no, was that their deer? No, I think it was an antelope because that was more antelope area. But it was completely broken legs. And when this work crew approached it, it jumped up and ran away with it, like its legs, its broken legs, kind of just dangling there, just pushing itself off of its little stumps. And like the crew said, they never want to see anything like that again. Like that was like
I can imagine. So
you know, it's interesting, this year must be a weird year for wildlife, maybe because people aren't as active as they, you know, they normally are. Because for the first time, and I mean the first time ever, I guess for the first time lately, because I have seen one badger before, but I saw like I had like multiple badger sightings. And one of them, it's like random. we were walking along a road and there was a badger in it. I'm like, wow, that's cool. I never see a badger up this close.
Jeez. Nice. Yeah. Nice.
Which was super cool.
Yeah. Well, I think we should wrap it up. I've got to go and do some more work and keep on cranking on things. So
yeah.
I'm glad we were able to get this done. This is some good internet here.
Yeah. Oh, before I forget, is there anything you want to bring up at the APN? Because I really liked that episode. Oh, God, was it I Dig It? The one about the most recent one. Is it the most recent one I was listening to? That was about those towns that were, for lack of a better word, whites only. That was a really good episode. I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah, they've been having some good stuff for a brand new show. And I will bring up, too, we've got another brand new show, which has just dropped their first two episodes on Friday, which is the Rock Art Podcast. And
both on Friday?
Episodes one and two both dropped on Friday, because that's usually what I do with a brand new show, is drop two episodes. And the first two episodes are really the story of our primary host, Dr. Alan Garfinkel, and his like life story. And he's lived a pretty interesting life, and how he came to get his PhD and study rock art and things that he's done. But actually, if you're listening to this live, we've already recorded through episode five, and this is dropping weekly on Fridays. So, and every episode after that, except for one, because our guest had trouble connecting. So Alan and I just recorded an episode about China Lake, but, so there's been three, I think two or three other guests so far, and he's got another guest book this week. So, for tomorrow's recording. So
yeah,
it's going to be a good show. Good show. I'm a co-host on it, but I'm not really speaking much because, unless he doesn't have a guest, because Alan is the expert here and he's speaking to other experts in rock art. So I just,
and he's just a fascinating person to listen to. Like, for people who have never met Alan, he is just a fascinating person in general. Like, I really always enjoy, spending time with him, but more importantly, Amy has listened to both episodes so far. She says those were great episodes. So, thank you for watching or listening.
Well, and Amy commented on episode zero too. And I passed this on to Alan. She had a suggestion for talking about cupules, and I passed that on to Alan, and he's looking for a guest, and we might just talk about it at some point. So if you ever have any suggestions for topics of any shows on the APN, pass them along. Pass them along to the host. Pass them along to myself, and I'll make sure it gets to him.
I do know. God, I want to say I know someone who did their master's thesis on it. I want to say he's either with one of the California State Utilities or maybe with the government. I mean, I can always pass it on after we end the live stream. But yeah,
absolutely.
Cool.
So,
and he was also he used to listen to the APN. I'm not sure about now. I haven't really worked with him in like many years. Mm-hmm. Oh, and Amy is very happy that you passed it on.
Yes. Cool. So, all right. That's it. The other big change is we're changing our entire membership structure. We're no longer going to have three-tiered membership. It's basically one-tier membership, and everybody gets the same thing. And I want my co-founder Tristan is basically managing it with our membership coordinator. And I think it's $7.99 a month or something like that, or $6.99, one of those two. Oh, and there's the annual rate that you can get.
Yeah. So just like Netflix or something like
basically.
That.
Yeah, Netflix, Hulu, they're all about the same. So we're basically doing the same thing just because we realized we weren't really giving three tiers worth of value. We'd love to, but we just don't have the time. So, we're really working on bonus content. We're going to have a bonus content schedule. So each month you're going to have, as a member, access to hopefully bonus content from at least one show. And and if shows want to do more, they can, but we're going to ask them to do one a month. And since we have about 13 or 14 active shows, they don't have to do it very often, which is less workload for them, which is good. So,
who else does that? Slate does that with their podcast, access.
Yeah.
And the only thing, unfortunately, the only thing they put on the major broadcast services now is basically commercials for their shows, which is kind of disappointing because my favorite Slate podcast, God, I always forget the name of it, but it's a music related podcast. Unfortunately, I used to really love listening to that podcast, and now it's only on slate.com.
Mm.
Oh, and Amy says sold.
Nice.
Cool.
All right. Well, let's wrap this up. I'm going to have this recording out. If you're listening to this on the Archaeology Show, that's where I'm going to put the recording. And if you want to hear us live, then go like arcpodnet.com on, or sorry, go like the Archaeology Podcast Network on Facebook. or you can find us also on Richie's resources at...
Yeah, on YouTube at Happy Archaeology Fun Time, and on Twitch at my username is The Man in the Hat.
Sounds good.
Yeah, and right. So I guess we'll see you guys everybody. Next time.
Yeah, thanks again to the people who commented and watched this live, and thanks Amy and John and Mark and anybody else that didn't comment. We do this for the live stream, so thanks for joining in.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll be back soonish. You know, maybe in a week.
That's right. That's right. I should have decent internet for the next month. So good to go.
Oh, really? Cool. Wait, are you just staying where you're staying now?
No. We're going to be at my parents' house for a few weeks, which they have great internet. So we'll be there.
Oh, cool. All righty, everyone. We'll see you later. All right.
Bye.
And... we are officially dead on... Live stream has ended. But the dude I worked with, God, I saw him when the last SCAs, God, it feels like a million years ago since we last went to that. But his name is Matt Armstrong. God, let me see if he's on. Oh, and John Flood, darn it. He said, cheers. Shoot. Oh, well. Hang on. Let me see if he's on LinkedIn. Unfortunately, obviously.
What did you say his name was?
Matt Armstrong.
Huh.
Older gentleman, kind of tall. I think he came up to chat with me when I was helping out at the APN booth.
Okay.
Wait, there he is. He is on, I believe. Yeah. I hope this is him. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like he does his uses LinkedIn a lot. It still lists him as being at Pacific Legacy, which he hasn't been since I worked there like over 10 years ago. That's kind of a shame. Ugh. God, thankfully I have not connected with him. Shoot. Unfortunately, he hasn't updated his contact info either. Damn, because he literally went all over the Sierras doing studying cupules for his master's thesis.
Nice.
And one of the people I worked with when we were on the Ruby said he had read his thesis and said it was really good. He was like really impressed with it. You know, but obviously it doesn't help. You can't get in touch with him.
No,
interesting.
No. All right, man. I gotta run.
Oh, cool. All right.
So. All right, sounds good, dude. Talk to you later. Yeah. Have fun.
Bye.
All right. Yeah, bye.
Thanks for listening to The Archaeology Show. Feel free to comment and view the show notes on the website at www.arcpodnet.com. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at ArcPodNet. You can also find us on the Lyceum app, a podcast app just for educational podcasts. Music for this show is called I Wish You Would Look from the band Sea Hero. Again, thanks for listening and have an awesome day. This show is produced and recorded by the Archaeology Podcast Network, Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle, in Reno, Nevada, at the Reno Collective.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
Thanks again for listening to this episode and for supporting the Archaeology Podcast Network. If you want these shows to keep going, consider becoming a member for just $7.99 US dollars a month. That's cheaper than a venti quad eggnog latte. Go to archpodnet.com/members for more info.